Imagine hiring a highly trained, incredibly expensive bodyguard to keep the paparazzi away from you, only to discover, like a month later, that this exact same bodyguard has been secretly wearing a wire. And they're live streaming your GPS coordinates straight to the tabloids.
The ultimate betrayal,
Right.
really.
You didn't just get compromised. You actively invited the threat in, you handed them the keys, and you actually paid them for the privilege. So, welcome back to Cyber Mornings Daily. Because whether you are a chief information security officer, looking at your dashboard over your morning coffee, or you're a frontline security analyst just gearing up for a 12-hour shift, today's deep dive is designed entirely for you.
Absolutely.
Our mission today is to hand you a high-signal, concise cybersecurity briefing. We are focusing purely on defender actions. We want you walking away with a practical roadmap to just secure your environment today.
Because honestly, time is the ultimate bottleneck in security operations. I mean, you don't need a history lesson right now. You need the actual mechanics of the active threats hitting networks today.
Right.
And the tactical steps required to just neutralize them before the day is out.
Exactly. And we have a fascinating stack of intelligence on the desk today that really it tests the limits of how we defend our perimeters.
It really does.
So we're looking at a critical Microsoft SharePoint vulnerability that is already seeing rapid real-world exploitation. And then from there, we're diving into the latest campaign from the North Korean Lazarus Group.
Which is wild, by the
Yeah.
way.
They are currently pairing this highly polished social engineering with a fresh Windows Zero Day. And finally, we'll unpack that bodyguard scenario I mentioned earlier.
Ah, yes, the Chrome extensions.
Right, this massive tangled web of malicious Chrome extensions that are masquerading as like top-tier privacy
You know,
VPNs.
laying it all out like that, there is a very clear narrative through line connecting these three distinct threats today.
Which is what.
Well, today's briefing is really a masterclass in the weaponization of trust.
Oh, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, the attackers aren't just brute forcing their way in anymore. They are systematically bypassing the things you and your users rely on the most. I mean, they're exploiting trusted infrastructure, trusted human relationships, and trusted privacy tools.
Wow. Okay, so let's start with that trusted infrastructure, which is basically the front door for a lot of
Yeah,
organizations.
the big one.
Microsoft SharePoint. Specifically, we need to talk about CVE 2026-550-40.
Right.
So this is a critical security feature bypass, and it stems from weak authentication. It carries a CVSS score of 9.1.
Which is huge.
Yeah. Just to ground that number for a second, a 9.1 means this is practically a hair on fire, wake up the incident response team kind of emergency.
Absolutely.
Microsoft actually patched this back in July 2026, but the kicker here is that this is the fifth SharePoint flaw exploited this year alone.
Yeah, we are seeing a really aggressive pattern here. I mean, we had CVE 2026 45659, then 56164, then 58644, and 50522, all in just rapid succession.
It's relentless. Why are they hitting SharePoint so hard?
Well, attackers love SharePoint because it functions as like the central digital filing cabinet for an entire enterprise.
Oh, sure.
It holds HR documents, financial roadmaps, internal source code discussions. If you own the SharePoint server, you essentially own the organization's intellectual property.
Which brings us to the mechanics of how this specific bypass works. Because earlier this week, the researchers at Rapid7 released a Python-based proof of concept, a POC, and it just tears this vulnerability down to the studs. It all revolves around the JWT token validation pipeline for Bearer Service-to-Service, or S2S
Right, the
tokens.
Bearer S2S token.
So let's demystify that a bit. What exactly is failing in that pipeline?
So, to understand the failure, we really have to look at what Bearer S2S tokens actually do in the first place.
Okay.
They're basically the mechanism different servers and services use to prove to each other that they are authorized to communicate within an environment.
Like a digital handshake.
Yeah, exactly. It's automated machine-to-machine trust. And a JSON web token, or JWT, it typically has three parts.
Okay, what are they?
There's a header, a payload containing the claims about who the user is, and a cryptographic signature. And that signature is there to prove the token hasn't been tampered with.
Right, so if I try to alter the payload to say, I am the CEO, the signature will instantly become invalid and
Right.
the server should just reject it.
In theory, yes, it
Okay.
should. But CVE 2026-550-40, it chains together four distinct weaknesses in the logic of how SharePoint's validation library actually checks that token.
Wait, four different weaknesses?
Yeah. So instead of rigidly enforcing the signature check, these logic flaws allow an unauthenticated remote attacker to manipulate the header parameters.
Okay.
And they do it in such a way that the server either checks the signature against the attacker's own provided public key,
mm-hmm.
or it just bypasses the rigid signature verification entirely.
I was trying to wrap my head around this chain of logic flaws earlier, and it made me think of, like, a physical security checkpoint at a big office building.
Okay, yeah.
It's not just that the intruder prints a fake VIP badge at home. It's that the barcode scanner at the front desk has this massive programming flaw.
Exactly.
So if the intruder prints a barcode that specifically says, I am the VIP, and also I am the one who issues the VIP badges, so you can totally trust this signature.
Right.
The machine just glitches out, accepts the circular logic, and waves them through to the directory.
That captures the mechanical failure perfectly. I mean, the SharePoint server accepts this forged, self-validated GWT as absolute truth.
Wow.
And from there, the attacker can impersonate any user on the site. If you look closely at that Rapid7 proof of concept, the script uses that forged token to immediately query the target's domain controller.
Oh, they don't waste any time.
Not at all. It enumerates the users by their security identifier, their SID, and automates a search to just locate the specific SID of a site administrator.
So the attacker doesn't just get access to the lobby. They immediately elevate themselves to the highest possible authority within the entire system.
Yep. They are sitting in the administrator's chair.
That is wild.
Now, to be fair, Microsoft has noted that this exploit does not allow the attacker to impact the system's availability.
Meaning what, exactly?
Meaning they aren't going to crash your server or encrypt the drives directly through this specific flaw.
Okay.
But they have full administrative privileges to disclose highly confidential files, modify data, and exfiltrate the crown jewels at will.
Which is bad enough. And, you know, the timeline of the exploitation is honestly the most alarming part of this intelligence to me.
Oh, the telemetry data.
Yeah, let's look at the telemetry captured by KevinTel. Since July 19, 2026, they've recorded 12 exploitation attempts in the wild.
Right.
But 8 of those 12 attempts happened on August 12 and 13.
Yeah, I mean, the ink wasn't even dry on the Rapid7 proof of concept.
Exact.
The Pacey drops, and within hours, attackers have fully weaponized it.
And the telemetry shows these attempts originating from 8 unique IP addresses, just mm-hmm. bouncing across Hong Kong, Japan, the Netherlands, Taiwan, and the U.S.
A very distributed effort.
Yeah, these threat actors are operating a global infrastructure, and they are just incredibly agile.
And this creates a stark reality check for your mean time to patch. I mean, the core takeaway from this intelligence is that the gap between a security researcher dropping a PC and active targeted exploitation by threat actors, it's practically zero.
Practically zero.
You have to operate under the assumption that advanced persistent threats are monitoring GitHub repositories and security blogs just as closely as your own threat intelligence team is.
So mapping this to a defender action plan for the morning, what is the immediate move?
Immediate remediation of any internet-facing SharePoint instance. If you haven't applied the July patches, you need to do it before you finish your coffee.
Got it.
This is not a vulnerability where the attacker needs to phish an employee first to gain a foothold. This allows them to bypass authentication entirely from the outside.
Because of that logic flaw.
Exactly. A patching the logic flaw is literally the only way to stop the server from accepting that forged badge.
Okay, so lock down the front door. But, you know, patching that server only solves the problem of a machine blindly trusting a fake badge.
Very sure.
Because the Lazarus Group campaign proves that sometimes it's much easier to just ask a human to open the door for you.
Right.
We're shifting from bypassing infrastructure to bypassing the human firewall.
Yeah, so now we are looking at the latest evolution of Operation Dream Job.
Which has been going on for a while, right?
It has. This is a massive, long-running cyber espionage campaign.
Mm.
It's executed by the Lazarus Group, which, for anyone who doesn't know, is a highly sophisticated, state-sponsored threat actor operating out of North Korea.
Right.
And Checkpoint Research just released a really deep dive analysis on their current tactics.
Yeah, and Operation Dream Job specifically targets defense and aerospace professionals.
Exclusively, almost.
Right. We're seeing active targets in France, Germany, Brazil, and India. And what strikes me is that these aren't your typical low-level phishing emails full of typos.
Oh, no, not at all.
Lazarus is building incredibly elaborate fake recruiter profiles on platforms like LinkedIn.
It's meticulous.
They approach these engineers and executives with tailored job offers from top-tier aerospace firms, specifically masquerading as recruiters from Lockheed Martin and also the data security firm Envale.
It is such a calculated abuse of human ambition and professional trust. I mean, they don't just send a malicious link in the first message.
They play the long game.
They really do.
Yeah.
They connect. They build a rapport over weeks. They discuss salary requirements, project portfolios.
Oh.
And then, once they have firmly established trust, they send over what claims to be a confidential job description or a secure application portal.
But there's a catch.
Always a catch. The victim has to open a malicious PDF, or in some cases, they're told to install a specific Trojanized PDF viewer to read the document.
Right. So the victim installs the viewer, and that software drops a backdoor called Troy and a secondary payload called MistPen, which then silently loads up to 4 different malicious modules onto the machine.
Exactly.
But, okay, I'm getting hung up on the technical timeline here.
Okay, what's sticking?
If I'm an engineer, right, and I've already been tricked into downloading the malicious PDF viewer and the Troy backdoor is actively running on my machine,
yeah,
I've already handed them the keys. They are in the system.
Right.
So why does Lazarus then need to deploy a highly complex Windows Zero Day on top of that? I mean, why risk burning a valuable exploit if they already have access?
That is a great question. And it really comes down to the difference between having a foothold in a system and having true invisible control over it.
Okay, explain that.
So when the victim clicks that PDF viewer, the malware executes in what we call user space. It inherits whatever permissions that specific engineer has.
Right.
The problem for Lazarus is that modern endpoint detection and response platforms, your EDRs, they are scrutinizing user space intensely.
They're watching everything.
They monitor every process creation, every file write, every unusual network connection.
So it's like they're inside the house, but every time they take a step, the motion sensors are tracking them.
Precisely. If they start trying to exfiltrate, you know, gigabytes of proprietary CAD files from user space, the EDR will flag it immediately.
Ah, I see.
So to turn off those motion sensors, they have to get out of user space and dive into the kernel, the central core of the operating system where the security tools themselves actually reside.
And that is why they utilize CVE-2026-68820.
Exactly. This is a local privilege escalation flaw in the Windows ancillary function driver for WinSoC,
which is known as AFD.SysSys.
Yep, AFD.SysSys.
So this flaw carries a CVSS score of 7.0 and was just patched in the August 2026 updates, right?
That's right.
So they use this AFD.vulnerability to escalate their privileges from the standard engineer's account all the way up to system level.
Yes. And once they have system privileges via that zero day, they deploy an updated kernel mode rootkit called FUD Module 3.1.
FUD Module.
Yeah. And this rootkit's entire purpose is defense evasion and deep persistence. It takes that MyStPen payload and injects it directly into a legitimate system process, basically cloaking it from standard security scans.
But the analysis showed FUD Module 3.1 doing something even more insidious to a feature called Smart App Control.
Oh, this part is fascinating.
Can we break down how that mechanism works? Because it sounds like they are fundamentally breaking how Windows decides what is safe.
So Smart App Control is a cloud-powered security feature, and it's designed to block malicious or unverified applications. FUD Module 3.1 actively tampers with it. The malware issues a highly specific command, an NSET system information call, to manipulate a deep system setting called the verified and reputable policy state.
And what does it do to it?
It simply changes the value of that state to zero.
Wow. I'm trying to picture how brazen that is. It's like an intruder breaking into a secure facility, getting a job at the company that makes the security cameras,
yeah,
and then rewriting the legal definition of an intruder in the corporate handbook.
That's exactly it.
They literally change the rule book so that the system inherently looks at the malware and says, yep, this code is verified and reputable. Let it run.
It is a phenomenal evasion technique because it neutralizes the operating system's native defense mechanisms from the inside out.
Right.
It proves that Lazarus isn't just a group of social engineers relying on basic phishing. I mean, they are bringing deep kernel-level software engineering to ensure they maintain stealth control of these aerospace networks long after they bypass the human element.
Which means the Defender action plan for this threat has to be a two-pronged approach.
It does. On the technical side, you must prioritize the August Windows updates immediately. You have to ensure that AFD.SysSys is patched against CVE-2026-68820.
Cut off that escalation path.
Exactly. If you remove the local privilege escalation vector, you trap the malware in user space where your EDR can actually see it and kill it.
And the second prong is addressing that human firewall.
Yes. You need targeted, relevant training for your high-value employees. Blanket phishing tests just aren't enough anymore. Your defense, aerospace, and critical engineering staff, They need to know that a highly polished LinkedIn profile offering a massive salary bump at Lockheed Martin might actually be a Pyongyang cyber operations unit trying to social engineer them.
They need to understand the specific tactic of that Trojanized PDF viewer.
Precisely.
You know, it really highlights how social trust is being weaponized against us. But that leads us directly into the third piece of intelligence on the desk today.
Yeah, the third part.
Because Lazarus relies on elaborate deception to force malware onto a machine. But what happens when the user actively seeks out the threat actor's infrastructure, believing it will protect them?
The privacy paradox. It is one of the most difficult challenges in modern enterprise security.
The researchers at Socket just uncovered this massive coordinated operation involving 737 free VPN and proxy Chrome extensions.
Yeah, 137 of them.
Yeah, and these extensions have just been sitting on the Chrome Web Store, quietly racking up over 75,000 installations.
It's staggering.
And out of those 737 extensions, 274 of them were explicitly built to impersonate 66 highly trusted privacy brands.
Yeah, we are talking about pixel perfect fakes. Fakes of ProtonVPN, NordVPN, Surfshark, ExpressVPN, even Cloudflare's 1.1.1 service and Google's Outline.
Which are huge names.
Right. These are brands that users actively hunt for when they are trying to secure their browsing traffic, particularly in regions like Russia, where users are trying to bypass heavy state censorship.
It is exactly like the bodyguard scenario we talked about. Users are installing these extensions because they want to protect their data from snooping ISPs or state surveillance.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, they are funneling every single byte of their web traffic directly to a threat actor.
Exactly.
Let's look at the mechanism of how these extensions actually hijack the browser, because it's a really brilliant abuse of Chrome's architecture.
So the extensions utilize the Chrome extension API to silently modify the chrome.proxy.settings. They basically reconfigure the browser to route the user's entire session through a fixed SOCKS5 server on port 1082.
Okay, for anyone who might be a little rusty on proxy protocols, what does routing traffic through a SOCKS5 server on port 1082 actually achieve for the attacker? Like, what does this look like in practice?
It establishes the threat actor in a classic adversary in the middle, or ADM position.
Okay.
By funneling all the traffic through their specific infrastructure, the attacker gains massive visibility. They can see the exact browser destinations, the source IP addresses of the users, and any data sent over plain HTTP request bodies.
But hold on, almost the entire web is encrypted with HTTPS now.
True.
Even if the traffic goes through their proxy server, isn't the actual content of the web page still encrypted?
The content of the web page, yes. But the destination is still exposed because of how TLS encryption works.
How so?
When your browser initiates a secure connection, it sends a server name indication, or SNI, value in the clear during the initial handshake. And this SNI value tells the server which specific website you're trying to reach.
Ah, so it's like sending a letter in a locked, transparent box.
Good analogy.
The attacker can't read the letter itself, but they can clearly see the mailing address printed on the outside. They still get the entire roadmap of your browsing history in real time.
Exactly. They know if you are visiting a dissident news site, a rival corporate domain, or an internal enterprise portal.
Wow.
And there is a crucial technical detail in how they configured these proxy settings. The extension code includes a bypass list, which tells the browser which traffic not to send to the proxy.
Okay.
But the only IP address on that bypass list is a loopback address, 127.0.0.1.
Meaning any local machine-level traffic stays local so the computer doesn't crash or break obvious internal applications.
Right.
But literally every single external web request is captured and funneled to the attacker server.
Yep.
Think about the headache that causes for an IT admin trying to troubleshoot why an employee's machine is behaving erratically on the corporate network while the local diagnostics look totally fine.
It's a nightmare to troubleshoot.
So, do we have attribution on who built this network?
Well, the evidence strongly points to a Russian subscription VPN business. Researchers uncovered a 12-digit Russian taxpayer number hard-coded into the operation's infrastructure.
Oh, really?
Yeah, but the most revealing piece of evidence came from an incredibly sloppy operational security mistake made by the developers.
I saw this in the intelligence brief, and it is almost comical.
It really is.
When compiling the code for some of these extensions, the developers accidentally leaked their own local Windows path directly into the payload.
They did. The path embedded in the malware literally reads See users all of one drive.
Yeah.
Which is documents in Russian1.mixawork08.06.26 release.zip.
Let me get this straight. They build this massive, sophisticated surveillance apparatus.
Yeah.
They successfully spoof 66 of the most trusted privacy brands on Earth. They get 75,000 people to install it.
Yep.
And then they hard code their own internal My Documents folder path, complete with Cyrillic text right into the code.
I know. It is a masterclass in fumbling at the 1 yard line. It points directly back to a specific developer environment in Russia. But, you know, we can't let the sloppy OPSC distract us from the severity of the threat.
Right.
The campaign is highly effective, precisely because it relies on brand impersonation. They aren't trying to convince users to trust a random, unknown VPN. They are simply piggybacking on the established, hard-won trust of brands like Nord and Proton.
So what does the Defender action focus look like here? Because the briefing noted that while Google removed 221 of these malicious add-ons from the Chrome Web Store, 516 of them are still active and available right now.
Yeah, that's the scary part. You cannot rely on the Chrome Web Store to curate your enterprise security.
Oh.
Defenders must proactively audit their enterprise browser extensions immediately. You need to push a query across your fleet, looking specifically for any extensions configuring undisclosed proxy settings, particularly anything routing traffic over port 1082.
And this really speaks to a broader cultural policy issue within an organization.
It absolutely does. You must rigidly enforce enterprise policies against employees downloading so-called free VPNs or proxy tools on company machines.
Because you get what you pay for.
Exactly. If an employee is traveling or requires a VPN for operational security, it must be provisioned, configured, and managed by the enterprise IT team, allowing users to source their own privacy tools from public web stores based on app reviews is an unmanaged, massive risk.
All right, let's bring all of this intelligence together into a cohesive roadmap.
Let's do it.
To wrap up today's Cyber Mornings Daily Briefing, you have three clear Defender actions to execute. Number one, audit your perimeter and update your SharePoint instances immediately.
Yeah.
You have to block that critical JWT authentication bypass before attackers exploit the logic flaw and forge a VIP badge to your servers.
Catch it today.
Number two, patch the August Windows updates, specifically focusing on the AFD.sys driver to kill that local privilege escalation. And concurrently, train your high-value engineering employees to spot those fake LinkedIn aerospace recruiter lures.
Crucial step.
And number three, audit your enterprise Chrome extensions right now for fake VPNs running stealth SOC KS5 proxies on port 1082.
Three distinct tactical actions addressing three very different types of threats.
Absolutely.
But as we close the briefing today, I want to leave you with a final thought to ponder that brings us back to our central theme,
which was trust.
Exactly. In all three of these stories, the SharePoint server validation flaw, the targeted aerospace engineers, the fake Chrome extensions, the underlying failure wasn't merely a breakdown of code.
Right.
It was a fundamental breakdown of verification.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's a server accepting a forged JWT token because the logic failed, or an employee engaging with a polished LinkedIn profile because it displays a Lockheed Martin logo.
Or a user trusting a Chrome extension because it stole the Proton VPN name.
Yes. The ultimate vulnerability in every single case is assumed trust. We build systems and processes that assume the badge is real, the recruiter is honest, and the privacy tools are secure.
Yeah.
I challenge you to look at your architecture today and ask yourself, in your own environment, what critical system or high-privileged user is operating with assumed trust right now? And how quickly would your defenses crumble if that trust were impersonated tomorrow?
That is the exact right question to carry into your day. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive. Take those Defender actions, secure your environments, and stay vigilant. We will see you next time.